Maggie Holtzberg, folklorist for the Massachusetts Cultural Council. A large part of my job involves traveling throughout Massachusetts, where I look for people carrying on traditions that are handed down to them. They might be related to crafts, dance, foodways, or working the water, but often it is music that is most present in people's lives.
I always was aware of the fact that every Puerto Rican knew the cuatro, and we love the cuatro, and just like every Scotsman loves the bagpipe. It really is a parallel love affair between the Irish and their harp, and the Scots and their bagpipes, and the Puerto Ricans and their cuatro. It just was a love affair that always existed, and it was never questioned. Nobody knew where it came from. It was just there.
William Cupiano is an outstanding craftsman. He makes all style of guitars, but he's best known for making cuatros, a small guitar that is a beloved national icon in Puerto Rico. William was born in Puerto Rico of mixed American and Puerto Rican parentage, but when he moved to the States to attend college, he left his bicultural upbringing behind.
I was able to keep my Puerto Ricanness submerged through most of my earlier life because of the fact that I was bilingual. I didn't carry the what they call the mancha del plátano. The mancha del plátano is that Puerto Ricanness that is obvious, the olive skin, the high Taino cheekbones, that kind of a classic Puerto Rican features. I didn't have the thick Spanish accent.
A chance encounter in William's guitar shop led him to reconnect with his Puerto Rican roots.
One of the shops that I had was in North Adams, which was a very depressed area. Less so now, I understand. But then it was really bad. And I became aware of the travails of the Puerto Rican community that was there. At one point, a guy came in to my shop, and I asked him where he was from, and he said, I used to live in Holyoke, but I was glad to leave there because of all the Puerto Ricans. And I looked at him straight in the eye, and I was wondering if I should enlightened him as to who he was talking to so carelessly, but I didn't. But it did get me to thinking about how distant I was from all that, and wondering if I should feel good about it or should feel bad about it. So it was an ethical dilemma.
Cupiano and a small group of colleagues of Puerto Rican descent began traveling to Puerto Rico to recover and document the history of this instrument, as well as an understanding of their own Puerto Rican identity. What they found surprised them. Practically no research had been done on the cuatro.
We wanted to answer this question, why does the Puerto Rican love the cuatro so much? Which is a kind of a good, general, all-embracing question. We saw that the cuatro has been a companion to the Puerto Rican since the 17th century and has been of enormous utility for cohesion, for social cohesion, very, very important. And so we ended up actually doing a kind of history of the people. And we learned later on that we were doing exactly what a lot of ethnomusicologists do, which is develop a cultural history through musical texts. And through musical texts and through the history of people's folk music, you could actually derive a chronology of the history of the people, of what they were interested in, what they sang about. I mean, it's really the really gold mine of history of the common person. The traditional historian is preoccupied with the history of the rich and famous and the powerful and the great heroes, where the story of the people exists is really which is preserved in the musical traditions. It's really a fabulous source.
Cupiano and his colleagues continue to mine this source. Their efforts, known as the Cuatro Project, have produced over 100 transcribed oral history interviews with prominent players and makers, a video documentary, hundreds of new and recovered photographs and recordings, a collection of stringed instruments, and the production of 5 major cuatro festivals.
During the 19th century, Puerto Ricans embraced the jíbaro and his traditions. Turns out that that was, interestingly, we learned, a whole intellectual movement all over Europe. It was called Romantic Nationalism. Wagner was extolling the virtue of folk tales and folk. Chopin, Stravinsky, Thoreau. It was the same period where the noble savage, all that was happening. And all over Latin America, the people who were living in cities, the bourgeoisie, that were in the revolutionary period of the 19th century, was looking back at the folk as being the carrier of the representative of the noblest and the wisest and the most natural exemplaries of national virtue. So in upper-class salons, Puerto Ricans, that is the bourgeoisie, started bringing in jíbaro instruments to play the European salon music. But the cuatro became a flag of affirmation. The next time the cuatro became really useful was as a link for the expatriate right after the terrible years that followed the American invasion of Puerto Rico. The Americans botched the job of, they were very bad colonists. It was a working economy, which the United States came in and completely ruined, and there was famine and plague followed. It was really a terrible, terrible situation. And the only recourse for so many Puerto Ricans was either to starve or to leave. And that's how the diaspora started. The connection to the cuatro was that these Puerto Ricans, to a great extent, carried their instruments with them. And they brought their traditions with them to the barrios. And they kept their musical traditions. And in fact, they cherished them. While in Puerto Rico itself, all these traditions began to fade because of the onslaught of American culture and Cuban culture and Foxtrot and the Charleston and all that stuff, and Puerto Rican, all these native traditions started to vanish. The cuatro survived, and it survived because the expatriates, the migration, they took them in their duffel bags, they took them in their suitcases back to the Connecticut tobacco fields. They jealously kept those things going, and that it appears that these traditions actually kept up the cohesion of these communities. So there's a history, there's a continuum of the Puerto Rican with the cuatro that results in the Puerto Rican loving the cuatro and not knowing exactly why, because they don't know this history. But all they know is that their uncle or their cousin plays a cuatro, and that they all feel a little teary-eyed when they hear the instrument. They don't know why, but they feel teary-eyed. Or they feel something that's lost, that they don't know exactly what they lost, but that whatever it is, they can recapture in the presence of the jíbaro music and stuff like that. So it's a very sentimental and very powerful attachment.
Cumbiano is the rare combination of scholar, craftsman, and musician. His research on the cuatro has influenced his own building of musical instruments. He came up through the guild system of guitar making, but he learned that the craft of cuatro making evolved more informally. Like many folk traditions, regional variations abound.
We went out to look for the cuatro, and we didn't find the cuatro. We found the cuatro tradition, which was really the fact that there was a cuatro in the northern coast of Puerto Rico that was tuned like the Spanish colonial bandurria, because it's on the coast and the big cities are on the coast, and had a violin shape, whereas the cuatro in the south coast had a completely different appearance, a completely different stringing. That because of the poor roads and bad communications, the cuatro makers in the south didn't have an idea of how there were other cuatro makers in the north who were making their cuatros, and thought that that was the way that cuatros were made. And then in the center of the island, you had a different cuatro that was far more rustic, because it was made in the isolated communities with hatchets and machetes being essentially the only tool. And they had, interestingly, a much more obvious African influence, whereas the guitar is made out of a lot of thin sheets of wood that are formed and then glued together at the seams to form these light sound boxes made out of almost paper-thin sheets of wood. The cuatro is really wrought from a solid block of wood which is carved. So you start with a block of wood, you hollow out the part that the sound box will be, you actually carve out the hole, you shape the outline around the hole so you have fairly thick walls, and you, right out of the same block, you carve out the neck. So you have a neck and this open shell attached at one end. And then you proceed to put the soundboard, which is the thin sheet that really carries the vibrations. I saw a number of technical improvements right away that could be easily adapted to the cuatro. I actually adapted the traditional forms that I had known with these technical improvements, and then I brought them back to Puerto Rico. And at first, they didn't accept them. There's a way of slanting the bridge saddle so that you get a more uniform pitch accuracy across all the strings that all cuatros lacked, because they lacked that slanting of the saddle. And the builders would say, well, you know, obviously with this such a refined instrument that you're making, why did you let the saddle get crooked? And I tried to explain it to them, and they didn't get it. That was about 8 or 9 years ago. And now I go back to the island, and I see how everybody is slanting their saddles now. And it was just because as the musicians and the repertory became more sophisticated, that the musicians demanded greater pitch accuracy. So whether I'm responsible or whether they found out from some other way, I feel like maybe I was part of this continuum.
I'm Maggie Holtzberg with the Massachusetts Cultural Council. William Cupiano continues to build cuatros in his Northampton studio, where he was interviewed by folklorist Jessica Payne. This has been the second in a continuing series exploring folk arts and heritage in Massachusetts. For more information, visit massculturalcouncil.org. And if you know of a cultural treasure in your community that we should know about, call us at 617-727-3668.
Commonwealth Journal is a weekly production of WUMB-FM Radio at the University of Massachusetts Boston. This special series was developed in cooperation with the Massachusetts Cultural Council. Funding has been provided by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts. Our engineer is Dave Palmatier. Danielle Knight is our assistant producer. Lisa Hickler is our associate producer. And our executive producer is Patricia Monteith. I'm Barbara Neely. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at 617-287-6913 or on the web at wumb.org/Commonwealth Journal. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next week for Commonwealth Journal.